Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the National Coalition of Labor, and here with me is Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Morning, Phil.
Good morning, Ed.
Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you as well.
Yeah, we should say right at the top here, Ken's not here. He's being celebrated as a father. I am also a father, as are you, Phil. We're not being celebrated today. We came into work.
Heroes.
Yeah, but you know, Ken just required a little bit of extra celebration of his fatherhood, I suppose. So
he's got some patching up to do with Evan. So
that's not true. That's not true. but happy Father's Day to everybody out there. Been a lot going on. Seems like it's been a pretty busy weekend with a whole lot of polarizing things. I'll talk about that in a second. But hopefully everybody's able to kick back, relax, and enjoy Father's Day today. Whether you are a father, you're celebrating a father, or you know, whatever else.
Give us dads our rightful due.
That's exactly right. What are your plans? You know what you've got in store today?
Every mom listener just rolled their eyes right now.
I could hear it. So many consecutive eye rolls. I felt like it was like a small earthquake. You could feel it in the ground. You deserve that.
Yes. I am going to be playing golf later this afternoon, as is tradition on Father's Day.
Great.
And then going to a barbecue at my sister's.
You're so not playing golf with your kids, I take it.
No kids allowed.
See, there's a couple different schools of thought on this.
A four-year-old and a six-year-old on a golf course might cause some problems for the people
behind. There's no way you're getting home with both of those kids. Somebody, one of them's getting lost.
No.
Never coming back. But, yeah, there's like two schools of thought on Father's Day. You either want to spend it doing stuff with your kids, or you, and this goes for Mother's Day, I think, too, or you see your kids so much every other day that you decide, I don't want to be around my kids on Father's Day.
Yes.
It sounds like you've got a nice blend.
Every
of
child
the two.
Is a gift, but so is every day away from them.
Yeah, so is every quiet golf round.
Yes,
is
it
also
is.
A gift. So
yes, it is.
Yeah, you've got barbecue, you've got golf. That sounds like a pretty nice
very traditional.
Day.
Very yeah. traditional. How about you?
We're doing brunch after the show, and then my daughter's headed off to Florida. She plays volleyball, so she's got a week in Florida. So after that, going to play golf. I've got no
beautiful.
Got nothing holding me back, so I've got a nice little Father's Day planned as well.
Cool.
One thing I wanted to throw in before we kind of get into the show, in the theme of Father's Day, you know, what do fathers do? What do mothers do? We care about the kids. And somebody else who cares about the kids this week is the Worker's Mic very own, WGN's very own, Kevin McDonough.
Hey, that was a great segue, by the way.
I really worked hard on that. I thought of that just before we started the show.
That was good.
He cares about the kids.
He does.
So Kevin is doing I think it's called Pedaling for Pat. And what it is every year he does this 70-mile bike ride to Michigan City, I think. But they raise a ton of money for pediatric cancer research. I think he said last year that they raised like $500,000. Half of it goes to Lurie Children's Hospital. Half of it goes to just sort of grants to families, whether it pays for their car payments or parking at the hospital, you know, whatever. If your kid's at the Lurie Children's Hospital here downtown, parking adds up.
That's great.
You know,
because that's real value provided to these families. In addition, obviously, the research is very important, but also when you can provide
right.
a real dollar support to people who are just going through, obviously, the worst thing ever imaginable for parents, and just to, you know, as you can imagine, those bills just stack up, and to help offset that is very admirable. So good for Kevin.
Absolutely. So generally, I think people don't ask for help with things like money, and a ribbon around the tree is great. It's nice to have the support, but those parking garages aren't free, nor right. are, you know, the doctors or any of that stuff. So I know I contributed. You contributed as well, I think, Phil.
Yes.
We're still waiting on Ken. But if anybody out there would want to support Kevin McDonough in this, you know, he's huffing and puffing like an old man from Beverly out there on his bike. So he's earning every penny. And you can find more at pedalingforpat.com. So check it out if you get a chance. Now, before we take a break, I mean, this was a busy weekend. Yesterday was a busy day. I can't
think of a busier Saturday in several years.
I mean you were hanging with, you were at the Pope Mass, right?
I was at the Pope Mass.
The
Carpenters had a big presence there. A lot of billing trades were there.
Yeah.
We all bought several hundred tickets. Mm-hmm. So it was cool. Got a nice video message from the Pope.
Just you? Do you mean the one that he gave everybody, or did he also send one just to you?
No, he sent me a DM.
That's awesome.
I know. We're tight.
He got into your DMs.
He did.
That's a big moment.
He slid into them.
Yeah.
It was cool. We had the Cardinal presided. There were thousands of union members there.
For sure.
It was crowded. Never thought I would be seeing Mass at Wright Field, but
yeah,
it was cool.
And have you been on your best behavior since, or did you fall right back into old habits?
Nope. I harbor years of Catholic guilt, so I'm always at my best behavior.
I get that. Okay. Well, congratulations. That sounds like an awful lot of fun.
Yes.
We also had the No Kings rally.
Across town.
Yeah. And all over the country.
Yes.
It's a weird thing. There were big crowds. The whole sort of tone and feel of the thing feels very divided and seems like something out of a movie. I'm not sure quite what to make of it. I'm still processing it, Phil.
Yes.
But we'll just thank God it was relatively peaceful.
This was in sharp contrast to what was happening in Washington, D.C.
Yes. The military parade.
The military parade.
President Trump.
The presider.
We're showing off the
tanks. Monarch.
Yeah, a lot of other countries do this, though. There's Russia. There's North Korea.
They're big fans of the goose-stepping soldiers.
Yes. China also, and I think that's it. So we find ourselves in good company. But at least it was free, right?
It was free, and it was celebrating our president's 79th birthday.
Yeah, so congratulate the 79 years that Donald Trump has been here, because he's 79 years old, or 79 years young.
79 years young.
Some might say.
Yes.
Some.
Yes.
On Truth Social, I think they call it 79 years young. But anyhow, big weekend, but we have a lot to talk about sort of on the worker front. There's some interesting stuff that's been going on over the past week, so we'll get into it right after this break here on The Worker's Mic on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed, here with Phil Davidson, and we wanted to touch on something that happened late last week, and that was the tragic death of a Chicago police officer. You know, unfortunately, we have seen so much of this in the past, I don't know, few years. It seems like there's, three, four every year that this is happening. But Officer Crystal Rivera, she died as a result of a gunshot she took on during a foot chase, I think in an apartment building.
Yes.
And the circumstances of it were tragic. I assume many listeners have heard about this. We just wanted to say that the show sends its best wishes out to her family, to the Chicago Police Department, and I know that there are a couple organizations that do great work to support the families in situations like this. So
Star Families.
Yeah, Gold Star Families. They've got the 100 Club. We have the Archer Avenue Parade and, many others. So we're hoping that the families will get some support and, a little bit of help, taking care of everything. So
yes.
Yeah, and there was some closure on the passing of some iron workers who had an incident up at University of Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, yeah. Last year it made headlines for a while. There was two iron workers were injured when they fell from scaffolding at the new cancer center at University of Chicago. One of them was critically injured. The other one died. And the family just reached a settlement with the contractors on the project. It was like $23 million for wrongful death.
Doesn't begin to fill the hole.
No, it doesn't begin to fill the hole. But, this...
At least it's over.
At least it's over. This this man, I think his name's David O'Donnell, was a iron worker, member of the building trades.
Sure.
And I hate to see that stuff happen.
Yeah, they're dangerous jobs. But, thoughts go out to them as well. But moving along, we wanted to talk on something that we hadn't really given an update on in a little while. The legislative session here in Illinois wrapped up about a week and a half ago, and we have no transit bill. We have no transit funding. We had spoken at length on the show. We were also the moderators of a panel here on WGN talking about the shortfall in transit. It was almost $800 million that the transit systems around Chicago, which is CTA, Metra, and PACE, will be short. And there was, you know, a lot of legislative effort to try to fill that gap, to, you know, come up with $800 million or come up with more to, you know, build a more modern transit system. But, you know, like so many things, it seems, I don't know if this is the way that everything works everywhere. I kind of think it might be. But it all came down to like the last day.
They ran out of time.
Day. Yeah.
Because it passed the Senate.
Right. It passed the Senate. It died on the House floor on the last day. They had a hard deadline of midnight on, or 11:59 p.m. on May 31st. And, you know.
It came down to the funding mechanisms.
Right. Yeah. Know? I mean, they're, you know, when you leave it to like 1 or 2 days at the end, you're just looking under the weirdest couch cushions to find money.
Yes.
And unfortunately, a really, really crucial piece of our government fell victim to the fact that we couldn't find a reasonable way to fund it.
Right.
It was being funded
one
off
of gimmicks. One of the suggested proposals was potentially a tax on deliveries.
Right, like so DoorDash on Amazon.
Correct.
On all this
like
kind
50
of stuff.
Cents or a dollar yeah. per deliveries. There was,
I read that, and it was just kind of like, and they were talking about raising tolls on the tollway, which, right. you know, I think is crazy because the whole idea of the tollway has always been tolls pay for the tollway. You know, so tolls paying for transit, it's just, you know, take. Then what do you do when you have to fund the tollway? Do you put a tax on transit
right.
to pay for the tollway? It just got convoluted, and, you know, it's unfortunate, and there are people out there, you know, are probably just like, well, whatever, you know, they've got enough money, they'll figure it out. But the reality is that starting next year, these systems, you know, CTA, the rail, the buses, Metra, the trains, like they're going to have to start making some enormous cuts, and I think the
40%.
Yeah, the biggest one is going to be CTA. They're going to cut half of their rail service next year unless there's something that some money falls from the heavens, and they're going to shut down 75 of their bus lines. So,
and actually, ridership is picking up
right.
on CTA.
Well,
I
people
there was
have
300
to,
million CTA rides last year,
and people more and more people are being called back to work.
Yes,
so people are coming back to work, so more people need the system. And if you're somebody who doesn't necessarily use transit, it's kind of like, you know, big whoop. PACE is going to have to cut off all of its weekend services. They're saying next year, if you have a job that requires you to work weekends and you don't have a car. This is a problem. So there are a lot of folks who find themselves in this boat. So I don't...
It hurts tourism.
For sure.
You know, like we're a world-class city. You need to have a transit system that supports tourists coming from during the summer, during the winter. It's reliable transportation for those people. It gets them to the destinations they like to see. I mean, that's just obviously one small facet of the issue at stake here. I think hopefully we'll see some movement between now and the end of the year. I think it's still on people's radar. I know our good friend Tim Dre put out a statement recently. Tim's the president of the Illinois AFL-CIO, saying that if these cuts were to go into effect, Northern Illinois' transit system would be the same size as Madison, Wisconsin's.
Wow.
So, yeah, I still am holding out some hope that they will figure out a funding source and make this happen. But it's getting scary. I feel for the workers. I feel for anyone who relies on public transit
to
get to work. I feel for people who, you know, have to use it to get to go see a doctor visit, to go to the grocery store. You know, like it impacts a lot of people. So let's hope cooler heads will prevail here and we get it done.
For sure. We've also got something going on with Job Corps.
Yes. So a few weeks ago, a directive came down from the Department of Labor saying that Job Corps, which is a program that's been around since the 1960s, and basically it provides housing to students from typically underserved areas, ages 16 to 24. And in addition, you're receiving education to become an expert in your particular field or whatever craft or vocation you want to pursue. So Chicago has a Paul Simon Job Corps Center down in Little Village. And at that particular training center, there's a carpentry trade, there's the bricklayers, and then I know there's a nursing program, there's an IT program. And it's just a great way for students, who a lot of whom our
would
own
never
house.
Be able to get to college.
Would never be able to get to college. Or high school. But honestly, like, this is a lot of them. This is their residence. They would be on the streets if not for this program. So you go through this program, and as it relates to the carpenters, once you graduate, you have direct entry into our apprenticeship program. Then you become a first-year carpentry apprentice. You work your way up. You do your 4 years of apprentice school. And then
so
you
people
become,
can go from being on the streets to being skilled and making money and having
to
health
making
insurance.
$55 an hour as a union journey person, journey level carpenter.
You want to talk about cutting costs of social safety nets, things like Medicaid, things like food stamps. These are careers. You can take somebody who's relying on all this stuff and invest a little bit of money and get them a career.
We're going to add $4 trillion to the federal deficit, but we can't fund this program that costs a couple hundred million dollars.
Well, we'll get into the big, beautiful bill in the second half of the show, but I get it. I mean,
it's so tough, and there's instructors who are members of our union and other unions who work there, and they're you know, your typical instructor comes in the morning, they've got their lesson plans, their agenda, they're teaching apprentices and sometimes journey level members who are doing, you know, further career education at Job Corps. I mean, you're also a mentor, you're a shoulder to lean on, you're providing them life advice. It's a tough job.
So what's going to happen to Job Corps? Is the funding being eliminated? Or
yes, it was paused. Wow. It's an indefinite pause right now.
Yeah.
And now Job Corps did file suit because this money was appropriated by Congress to keep this program going for the past 60 years.
Right.
And so there is a temporary stay right now because a couple weeks ago, they were all told, every Job Corps center across the country, there's I think 99 across the country, were told, pack your things, we're done here.
And for people who had found an opportunity there and were maybe halfway through their training, it's just like, oh, sorry, we've got to send you back, you know, wherever you came from.
Exactly.
There's so much rhetoric around, you know, job requirements for Medicaid and like everybody should go get a job. Sometimes this whole like pull yourself up by your bootstraps thing isn't just that easy for people.
No.
So, hearing something like this where you can invest some money and it puts people to work in a career where not only are they not going to be on Medicaid, they're not going to be on food stamps, they're not going to be on welfare, they're going to be paying taxes. You know, it seems like that's a wise government investment, but we have to cut.
It's a net benefit for a government, yes.
And the cut is going to basically just give some billionaires the ability to not pay as much in taxes.
Yes.
So we're sort of ceding our government to
buy a new Maserati. Yeah. There's been 3 million graduates of Job Corps.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And I mean, that changes the course of a family. Like think of generations of a family that have lived in poverty and all of a sudden one person gets in and it can be a real game changer for these folks, but it sounds like it might be in doubt. Hopefully calmer heads prevail. And
there's a campaign going right now to encourage members of Congress to push back on this. And I think cities around the country are passing resolutions to tell governors, to tell the administration, to tell their leaders in Congress and the Senate, hey, we need to refund this program. And I believe it's bipartisan. Like
you can't be against welfare and job training, okay? If you're going to be against job training, then just put everybody on welfare.
Exactly.
But if you're not doing either, like these people are going to go somewhere.
Yeah,
but,
it's cold.
Yeah, so we've got to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the new analysis of the big, beautiful bill. We've got some NLRB and Department of Labor stuff. And we'll check in with what's going on over at Grindr. I don't know if you're familiar with Grindr, Phil.
Why are you looking my way?
I'm not, because you're the only person here and I'm talking to you. My mom taught me to be polite and make eye contact. Anyway, we'll be back right after these words with more Workers' Mike right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mike. More show to come. Sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson, and we're happy to be here with you on Father's Day. We wanted to get into a couple of things. We teased earlier in the show, we were taking a couple of little shots at that wonderful piece of legislation known as the Big Beautiful Bill, which is sort of the blueprint, the layout for all of the administration's goals, whether it's cutting Medicaid, cutting, you know, whatever, and lowering tax rates.
Can
for
you
the
start
wealthy.
Calling me Big Beautiful Phil?
Big Beautiful Phil. The BBP. I like that.
Thank you.
That's great. I absolutely will start calling you that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, mostly just when you're not around. But the Big Beautiful Bill, there's been a whole bunch of analysis because a couple of weeks ago, this thing was voted on in the middle of the night. And then, you know, there was some outcry when Elon Musk and Donald Trump broke up publicly.
The bromance was fractured.
Yeah, and he said he was going to fire all the Republicans who voted for it. So all of a sudden you had big Trump-supporting Republicans saying, I didn't know that was in there. I wouldn't have voted for it if I knew that was in there, which I think, you know, if you or I said, oh, I did this, but I didn't read the email or I didn't know what I was doing. I just did it. Everybody else gets in trouble for that.
Of course.
Right? But for some reason, they're just like, well, I didn't know. I mean,
it's the age-old tactic in the minority party. Anytime a majority party passes a bill, says, we never got a chance to read the bill.
For sure.
What's unique is this is the majority party saying we didn't read the bill. It's like, guys, come on.
Our guy tricked us.
Yes.
But, I mean, there's been some additional analysis on this thing. And I'll go through it quick because, I mean, I know everybody hears so much on this. So I don't want to kick this dead horse any deader than it already is. But some analysis from the Economic Policy Institute said that essentially this will be the single largest transfer of wealth from the bottom to the top in American history, which I don't know if anybody thought that that was what America needed, like the lower class is doing so well, we've got to give a little back to the billionaires. I don't care what party you're in.
They need to do their part. Come on.
It doesn't matter what party you're in. Is this like, are we hoping that the trickle-down hasn't worked enough because we haven't given the rich enough money where they can trickle it down?
Yeah.
I don't think
so.
They
need extra money to build another bunker.
Well, when you build spaceships as a hobby, that's a proof that trickle-down economics doesn't work.
It does not work.
It's like if you give them extra money, it'll trickle down. Oh, no, 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 no. It will rocket up. I gotta think of a better thing, but I might be onto something. Listeners, I trust you all that you won't steal this really awesome catchphrase that I'm working on here.
Rock it up. All right.
Yeah, rock it up economics. But one of the things that got cut is over $1 billion in clean energy funding, because clean is woke and, you know, solar power and wind power and all that stuff is not cool.
It's communist.
So it's being defunded. Now, what does that mean for workers? Because in the building trades here in Chicago, around the Midwest, there are a lot of workers who, whether it is solar farms or wind farms or battery plants, these were jobs that when a battery plant gets announced, it's $1 billion, $2 billion, $4 billion project. These things are huge, and people are counting on them for years of work.
Yeah.
You know, unions are like, hey, we're going to be able to bring in apprentices and train new people because we're going to have all this work, right?
Nuclear facilities?
Yeah, so a lot of this stuff.
I think Illinois just lifted our moratorium on
nukes. So you can build new nuclear facilities.
Which are very clean.
Exactly. But clean energy is sort of fallen victim in the Big Beautiful Bill. And essentially what they have found here is that roughly 3 billion work hours will be lost on clean energy project just by what they're seeing in the Big Beautiful Bill. So
is this rescinding some of the legislation that was passed during the Biden administration?
I think
with
so.
The Recovery Act and CHIPS bill.
It defunds some of those programs that I think everyone acknowledged were already putting people to work and people in the building trades.
Hundreds of thousands of people to work.
For sure. I mean, if you look at 3 billion hours, work hours, and you figure an average tradesperson works 1,500 hours a year.
Yeah, give or take.
I'm not very good at math, so I don't know what that comes out to. But it's like 2 million workers, I want to say.
Yes.
This equals 2 million workers that would have had a job this year that won't have a job.
I'm just going with it, Ed. I don't know if that's verifiable, but it's not
good
to
me. I'm going to look to the booth, and they're all shrugging.
So booth, you guys have calculators.
But anyway, let's just say, who out there do we think voted to lose their job so billionaires could pay less in taxes? If there's anybody out there, I would love it if you would send us an email because we'd like to have you on the show.
Yes.
And we'd like to submit you to science and have somebody maybe examine you and study your brain because people are who supported, some of this stuff are not, it's now like, oh, well, your job is gone because we don't believe in wind and we don't believe in the sun and we're going to we're going to go back, and you could be a coal miner. It used to be learning to code, and now it's just like learning to coal mine.
It's government intervening in the markets and manipulating them, which is, seems to be the antithesis of what conservatives in the Republican Party used to stand for, because a lot of what was happening with clean energy, with solar, with wind, was driven by the market. It was auto manufacturers saying, like, look, we think that there's more interest and more demand for EV vehicles.
Yeah.
Same with energy plants. A lot of utilities are saying, like, look, coal is, I mean, it's cheap, but just it's hard to find the workforce for it anymore.
Well, right.
We see that there's value in solar energy. And now the government's saying, like, no, we're going back to fossil fuel based energy. And my point is, all the renewables was not, the government forced this down the private sector's throat.
For sure.
They had their own interest in it. They saw where the tides are
turning.
There's
money to be saved, money to be made.
Exactly.
And sort of, dwindling supply. At some point, fossil fuels aren't going to be there anymore.
Exactly.
And I mean, I feel for coal miners.
Right.
I mean, that's something that was a backbone of this country for, generations.
Yes.
And other things changed. And there are a lot of folks in Appalachia and across the country who, don't have jobs mining coal anymore. And I think, when an industry sort of falls behind or just goes under like that, it's sort of a government responsibility to say, train them in another industry or help support them in some way, shift a region so that they have another place to go to work.
Yeah, not to mention how dangerous that job was.
Well, they're
one of five, I believe, have some symptoms of black lung. I mean,
and we'll get into black lung, because black lung, the treatment for workers with black lung fell under an area of the Department of Labor, NIOSH, that has been eradicated.
Yes.
So, like, if you had black lung, we don't care. But there have been coal mines that have been opened in states where nobody was asking for those coal mines to be opened.
Correct.
There are plans to open coal mines in states where they've been closed for 40 years, and there's nobody left to work there. So it's silly, and it's not necessarily going to benefit anyone. It'll just feed into this sort of thing that, happens every 4 years.
Yeah, and
closes it, next party opens it, and nothing ever actually gets
I think
done.
There's enough for everyone. I think I support, the abundance energy policy, where you do have the mix. You do have a little bit of coal, you have the natural gas, you have renewable, you have solar. But just to say, like, no, anything renewable is woke, we're getting rid of it, is so short-sighted, and you're just putting your thumb on the scale, and you're decimating jobs. It's just, why go that direction? What,
right.
Just to own the libs? I mean, is that what we're doing here?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. Those libs just got to get owned.
Yes.
Nobody owns the libs right now. They are, just wandering around in the streets, and nobody owns them at all. So somebody's got to own those libs, apparently. But anyhow, so the Big Beautiful Bill is a big, beautiful pile of, I don't know, something.
Yes, bile.
We're not a
pile
huge,
of bile.
Not a huge fan around here. That's a big, beautiful bill. Thank you very much. But we'll keep you posted on that, kind of as it keeps going.
Yeah, because the Senate's making tweaks.
For
so
sure.
We'll see what actually comes out of the BBB.
Whatever happens, they're going to undo some of the unpopular things, but billionaires' taxes aren't going back up.
Yes.
Like, so it's going to get worse. It's going to be a bigger, like, it'll be a bigger suck from, if you want to talk about, like, deficit, all this stuff. I'm not smart enough to have these conversations, and I'm going to recognize that for the first time ever, because usually I just dive right in and talk out of my rear end, but not today.
Wow, that's
today.
Great, Ed.
Big, beautiful Phil.
That's progress.
Thank you. My therapist would be very proud of me. But we wanted to get into a couple other things. We teased the Grindr story earlier in the show, and I know everybody was fascinated by that. So Grindr.
By everybody, you mean you.
I was fascinated. I knew it was coming, and I was still fascinated. But Grindr is a dating app for, I think it's all LGBTs. Maybe it's just, I'm not sure.
So I've heard.
Yeah, Phil. Who else is on there?
I said that a little too confidently. This is just what I hear from my friends.
Right. So it's a dating app. The gay dating app, I think it's LGBT for everything, but I'm not sure. So Grindr used to all their employees, which are, tech people.
Yes.
It's an app. Tech people, salespeople, whatever. They started working on forming a union. And they had been told sort of that their work from home policy, because it used to be total remote work, they had been told that their total remote work policy was safe. They formed a union. The developers there formed a union, and 2 weeks later were told everybody had to come back and work in an office. So a lot of folks were fired, laid off, let go, whatever you want to call it, because they didn't come back to work in the office. And then they were replaced by teleworking individuals. So the NLRB looks like it's planning to file a suit against Grindr. So I raise this because the NLRB is doing something.
That's interesting.
And that makes it just makes me happy to know that the NLRB is still out there. Now, this is probably an administrative law judge who got an unfair labor practice complaint or something.
Yeah.
And they're going to take some action. Now, ultimately, all this stuff can just be appealed and appealed and appealed up to where there is no quorum currently.
There is no quorum currently.
I think there's some scuttlebutt that administration.
The chairman said that appointments are imminent. So okay. They could have a quorum, but who knows what that means.
I bet they're going to be really good for workers, too. Yes. Whoever they put on there is going to be like, hey, we got to look after our workers.
Yeah, that seems like something, when they get around to it, that the administration will make those appointments. They're like, we'll see, sure.
Yeah, they're going to get like some straight-up Robber Baron cigar smoker from like the 1930s.
They got to repaint the basement of the NLRB before they decide if they're going to make the appointment. They got a lot of housekeeping to do before they get around.
We want to put the kids back in the factory, see? Yeah. So keep an eye out for that, certainly. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about before we take a break in a few minutes is a job in the Department of Labor. So workers out there, we depend on the Department of Labor for a lot of things. They enforce the nation's labor laws, things like OSHA that gives us safe workplaces, like NIOSH that protects and workers who've been exposed to workplace hazards like black lung or silica sand or, 9/11, all that type of stuff, down to, minimum wage, prevailing wage, all that stuff. It runs through the Department of Labor. And one of the most powerful jobs in the Department of Labor in Washington is the Solicitor of Labor. So he's...
Which was a position that I will admit I was unaware of.
I was, I'm going to say I was slightly aware, but I wasn't. I was also unaware. But I was doing some reading over the past week, and I saw that the Solicitor of Labor, who is basically, call him like the... he's like a U.S. attorney almost,
okay.
Just for labor. He's in charge of about 500 lawyers, or what used to be 500 lawyers, who go out and file suits against anybody who's violating federal labor laws.
Got it.
So if you're a company that is routinely and systematically violating minimum wage laws or not paying construction workers prevailing wage, the Department of Labor can file a suit against you. And they have all these lawyers who do this stuff. It's all directed by the Solicitor of Labor.
So it's like the Solicitor General for labor specifically.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So... who is the nominee who is waiting to be appointed to this role?
I shudder to think.
Or who has been appointed but is waiting to be confirmed. His name is Jonathan Berry. And what makes Jonathan Berry such an interesting pick...
It's a familiar name.
...is that he wrote the section of Project 2025
oh, no.
about dismantling the United States Department of Labor. So...
So we have the fox in charge of the hen house here.
I know. I can, once again, like the all the moms out there when we were talking about Father's Day, I can hear all the eyes rolling out there at the mention of Project 2025, because it seems like something, people are like, enough. But, it was something that was written, there were sections that were written about getting rid of worker protections. And the guy who wrote that...
Gleefully.
Yeah, the guy who wrote that is going to be potentially the Solicitor of Labor who is able to... not enforce federal labor laws. So if anybody thinks that this wasn't a thing or was just sort of some, whining from the left or something like that, it's happening.
It's real.
So it's
real.
It's happening. And
I mean, you could look at Project 2025, take out a red pen and check off everything that they've accomplished already in 6 months.
And this guy specifically who wrote this, Jonathan Berry, one of his biggest points, and this is important to anybody out there who works in the building trades, one of the biggest things that he advocated for in Project 2025 was repealing prevailing wage laws. So that, that matters to construction workers across the country, because prevailing wage is essentially a minimum wage for construction workers who are working on taxpayer-funded projects.
Yes.
Right? It's essentially a protection that in Illinois, if you are a laborer, an electrician, a painter, whatever, and you're working on a school that the government pays for that's funded by local taxpayers, you're going to make what workers make in that local area.
And so, it's generally tied to the union contract in that particular area? Close. Not always, but it's close.
It's close. So yes. If you are a taxpayer in LaSalle County and you are funding the construction of a school, that school will be paid, people who work on that school will be paid at the local wages, which yes. encourages local people to put their money back into the economy. It's essentially just to keep money in a local economy. And without that, you'll have folks from God knows where, southern states where the standard of living or the willingness to work for a lot less money is there. So you could have folks from, say, I'm not here to pick on Alabama, but I'm going to do it anyway. Alabama coming up and saying, hey, you're paying this person $55 an hour. I'll do it for $12 an hour with no benefits. That's a race to the bottom that hurts local economies.
That's not something that local governments should be involved with.
For sure. Yes. And taxpayers shouldn't be undercutting their neighbors out of jobs.
No.
So that's one of the things that's being talked about here is repealing prevailing wage. And this is the guy who's going to be put in charge of enforcing federal labor laws. Like, hey, Dave's Construction isn't paying minimum wage to its employees. We should sue them, right? Nah. Like, that's the
He's
level.
He's like, actually, I think Dave's is paying too much.
Yeah.
Let's see him lower their... That's I want to see true poverty wages.
Yeah, reducing the teeth, let's call it, in the enforcement of... federal minimum wage violations is another thing that this guy's all about. So think about what that means. What is minimum wage? It's what, $7.75?
I think it's $7.25.
These people are among the poorest people in America.
Yeah.
And we are going to make things harder for them.
Even worse.
Yeah, we're going to make it harder for them to get their $7 and change.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Hold up the nomination. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been confirmed yet, but I'll be keeping an eye on this one. And I think, you know, everybody out there will give you updates on this, but this is something that's worth listening to because it's a good way to take the temperature of where this administration is at and how they feel about workers. So
pay attention to what's happening to the middle class and the working class
right now.
Just keep don't lose sight. There's a lot of distractions out there, but keep your eye on the ball.
It's cars burning in the streets in California, but let's look at these little
focus
things.
Focus on the working class and ask yourself, are they thriving right now or are they is all the burden being shouldered on them?
Yeah. We don't want to wake up 3 years from now and realize like, oh man, we were watching the wrong thing.
Exactly.
So we have to take a quick break. We'll be back with the wrap up of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back to the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. We've got a few minutes left in the show. There was big news this week. People have been watching. The House, on the thinnest of margins, voted to cut funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting by $1 billion. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, of course, funds NPR, PBS, all programming that the Trump administration has determined to be woke.
So Oscar the Grouch is not the only one who's going to be living in a trash can.
Hey, nicely done, Ed. Yes, this is true. It's just, it's unfortunate. I'll put out one more clarion call to our listeners. It's difficult, but you have to be savvy media consumers now. Really, you like, don't take anything at face value. I mean, there's so much.
It's hard,
especially with everything with AI right now and how there's just everything can be manipulated. You're looking at a video that looks 100% real.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's not. Just be wary of the information that's being presented to you and have a healthy dose of skepticism because, you know, of course, there's slants in the way news is reported from the right and left. No one's perfect. Everyone's got a bit of a bias. But, you know, you need to have some sort of source that is just calling balls and strikes. And I think for the most part, you know, public broadcasting did that, and now it's being decimated. And you know, they'll hopefully be able to make up that shortfall with donors, support from their listeners and viewers. But you know, you don't resort to getting your news from Facebook and TikTok and X.
Seriously. No matter what, just make sure you listen to the Workers' Mic.
Most importantly.
Yeah.
Most importantly. But as, you know, fellow broadcasters, we feel for them and we hope this...
I've never thought of myself as a broadcaster.
No, you are. You're a pro.
Thank you. Thank you.
Season pro.
Big, beautiful Phil. but yeah, we've got to wrap up the show. But before we do, wanted to throw a shout out to a couple of dads here. And one of them is your dad, Phil.
Who was in the studio a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Doug Davidson.
Yeah.
So happy Father's Day, Dad.
Happy Father's Day to him. I will say happy Father's Day to my dad, Liam Maher, who's no longer with us. But if he's anywhere where you can get WGN, he will be listening, I'm sure. So happy birthday, Pop. But get out there and enjoy your Father's Day and be back with us next week for more Workers' Mike. Right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.